This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to Progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit Progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
What if there were a test that you could use to literally save your life? And what if I told you that that test was something available to you easily in your own bedroom? Well, if you're interested, stay tuned because we're going to be talking all about that in just a minute.
It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today, the show where we talk all about sleep and the science behind sleep. We love educating our audience about how to get a better night's sleep. Today, we have an expert on, Dr. Chelsea Rorscheib. She is the head sleep scientist and the head sleep expert at Wesper, and we're going to tell you what that is as we get going. But let me start off by welcoming Dr. Rorscheib. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on today, Andrew. I just love talking sleep. So anytime I get a chance, makes me real happy.
Well, you're in the right place. That's what we do here. Okay. So to kick off today's show, maybe it's a good place to start if I ask you, here we are, it's now 2026 when we'll be listening to this show, and what types of things are you seeing in the sleep industry in terms of issues that are becoming sort of forefront for sleep doctors and for patients that are dealing with particular issues of their own?
Yeah. So as you're probably aware, there are many, many different types of sleep issues and sleep disorders. Over 80 sleep disorders recognized, in fact, but some are a lot more common than others. So typically, the types of sleep issues that we see coming through the medical system consistently are going to be issues related to insomnia, which is an inability to fall asleep or stay asleep throughout the night. That's pretty common. The second most common sleep issue that we see is called sleep apnea, and this is really a disorder of your breathing while you sleep. So approximately 20 to 26% of the U.S. population is thought to have sleep apnea. Honestly, these rates are probably higher. It's just really hard to actually track these individuals because so many people go without getting a diagnosis or treatment. But sleep apnea is really caused by pauses in breathing throughout the night when you sleep. And this can be caused by an obstruction in the upper airway. So something is blocking the flow of oxygen into your lungs. Or less commonly, it's more of a neurological issue where the brain is not telling the body to breathe. So very, very common. Some other sleep issues that we see that aren't as common, but we do see frequently enough, include things like restless leg syndrome, narcolepsy, which is also a type of hypersomnia disorder, circadian rhythm disorders. And certainly we do see some behavioral disorders that occur while you sleep. Like nightmares, sleepwalking, sleep talking, things like that as well.
Wow. That's a pretty big list of things for us to be aware of. But, you know, years ago, nobody would have talked about any of these things. And now here we are on the radio talking about it. So we've made a lot of progress. You know, I was listening to the list, and the question that popped up into my mind was, are any of these sleep disorders that you've talked about or any others, are they things that people might like be doing something to cause them, or are they all things that are just sort of happen to us?
It's a little bit of both. So, you know, we have the nature versus nurture environment. Some people are genetically predisposed for some of these sleep disorders. Now we have a little bit of information on why that is by investigating genes over the decades and seeing how they correlate to rates of certain disorders. A lot of it can also be behavioral and also lifestyle related. So, for instance, insomnia, you can have a variety of genetic variants that make you more prone to being a very sensitive or light sleeper, or somebody who has a lot of stress and anxiety in their life, which also affects their ability to sleep. Typically, if you have a family history of insomnia, you're more likely to develop it, but also just generally having poor behaviors like poor sleep hygiene. So drinking caffeine too late in the day, looking at your electronic devices before you go to bed. These can all contribute to developing that disorder. Uh-huh. With things like sleep apnea, yes, there's definitely a genetic component. So if you have a direct relative that has sleep apnea, that usually increases your risk by about 50%. This is because your family can give you anatomical features that make you more prone to have those upper airway blockages. This is because it's primarily an anatomical issue, especially the obstructive type of sleep apnea. There are some lifestyle factors that can contribute to sleep apnea, such as smoking, living an unhealthy lifestyle, having an elevated BMI that can also place you at risk. So, like I said, it's a combination of both. Sometimes it can be hard to figure out what exactly is causing the sleep issue for you. And that's why it's really important to work with a licensed sleep health professional.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So, you know, I really would love to follow up a little bit on that from the sleep apnea perspective. Yeah. You know, this genetic component and the fact that if it may run in families, you're saying. And here's my question. So if I purely look at the media, if I look at the internet and I listen to things that I hear in the media, I get a picture in my head of someone who's typically a middle-aged male carrying some extra weight, maybe not the best diet, maybe a smoker, whatever it may be. Is that true, or could there be other types of people that also struggle with sleep apnea? Or when I say also, I'm assuming that my first correct, you know, iteration is true. Fill us in. What type of person, if there is a type of person, might be more prone to sleep apnea?
Yeah, I love this question because this is a very unfortunate stereotype that has been spread around for a really long time. And the reason for this is because typically when somebody's highly symptomatic and they snore really loud and you hear them choking in their sleep, it's typically in a certain type of sleep apnea patient, and that does tend to be a middle-aged or older adult man. And so the symptoms of sleep apnea can be a lot more subtle in other demographics, such as women or younger individuals. So the reason is most research has been done in that more stereotypical demographic and not so much in these other demographics where not quite as obvious. But now, after decades of research, we have a much better understanding of what causes sleep apnea and who is actually at risk for sleep apnea. So now we know anyone can have sleep apnea, young, old, thin, elevated BMI, physically fit, not physically fit, you know, even little children get sleep apnea. And wow. So the primary reason for sleep apnea, again, is it's not really how healthy you are. It's not really so much about your lifestyle. It's an anatomical issue, right? Some people are just born with very narrow airways that are more prone to collapse. Some people have enlarged tonsils. Some people are born with an enlarged tongue. And these are all factors that can contribute to that upper airway blockage. So if you are somebody like myself who has a very narrow jaw, you are going to be more prone to sleep apnea, regardless of how old you are, regardless of how fit you are, regardless of how healthy you are.
Wow. So if somebody has sleep apnea, will they know it? In other words, will they struggle to sleep and wake up realizing that they're not breathing? Or is there any signs that someone could look for that would tell them that they have sleep apnea?
Mm-hmm. So there are a handful of really obvious signs. Now, I should preface this by saying that individuals with sleep apnea can have a lot of signs and symptoms. They can have severe signs and symptoms, or they can have very few signs and symptoms and very mild signs and symptoms. There's a full spectrum. So no two people are the same. The most typical symptoms we see would be snoring. Snoring is pretty common in sleep apnea patients. And this is because the same issues in the back of your throat that cause those airway blockages can also cause that snoring sound. You don't have to be a heavy snorer. You don't have to snore like a freight train. Really, any amount of snoring, even if it's quite light, is definitely a sign for sleep apnea. Another very common sign, and this is usually noticed more so by a bed partner, such as a spouse or boyfriend and girlfriend, they may notice that you have long pauses in breathing while you sleep. They may notice that you make gagging noises or choking noises. They may notice that you accidentally wake yourself up from these choking and gagging noises. That's called an arousal, which is really just a kind of a technical way of saying that you've woken up briefly. Mm-hmm. Some other really common symptoms include excessive daytime sleepiness. So sleep apnea really reduces your sleep quality and really prevents you from getting into those deeper, more restorative stages of sleep. So most sleep apnea patients do have some level of daytime sleepiness. Cognitive issues, brain fog, poor focus and intention, maybe some memory issues, maybe your mood is reduced. Some individuals have frequent morning headaches that kind of go away as the day goes on. Oops, sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Increased nighttime urination. Interestingly enough, insomnia is another common symptom. And this is because your brain is so predisposed to not breathing properly and not getting that oxygen during the night that your brain will try to keep you awake so that you can maintain your oxygen levels. And then there's some lesser symptoms. So teeth grinding can be pretty common. Nightmares, weird behaviors during sleep. So sleepwalking, sleep talking, things like that.
Wow, that's a long list. I'm thinking to myself, so if I'm listening to this, maybe the easy case is if I know that I, you know, let's say I do have a bed partner and that person tells me that, oh, wow, you're really snoring and man, you were gasping for air. That would be sort of the easy one to say, maybe you should get that checked out. But what about a person who sleeps by themselves and doesn't have anyone to say to them, hey, you were, you know, doing these things last night. How does a person in that scenario know whether or not they're even, you know, should be worried about sleep apnea?
Right. It's tricky, especially if you don't know what to look for. But the main things are, so if you're somebody who is constantly tired and fatigued during the day and you don't really know why, so maybe you feel like you're getting enough hours of sleep. Maybe you even feel like your sleep seems deep and you're dreaming enough and it's restful, but you're just feeling a little bit tired and you've gone to your PCP, you've done all the blood tests, you've done all the other assessments and nothing is really coming back. That's a pretty big red flag for sleep apnea. Another reason that's more subtle, that we frequently see for people who eventually go on to get assessed for sleep apnea is small spikes in their blood pressure. So, being pre-hypertensive is a big sign, and that's because sleep apnea puts a pretty large strain on your cardiovascular system. And one of the first ways we see, the cardiovascular system start to go downhill a little bit is usually with elevated blood pressure. Some other things, if you just feel like you don't have enough energy during the day, you feel like, you know, you're getting very fatigued. If you're just not like as sharp at work or you feel mentally kind of low, unable to focus, really concentrate, that's another subtle but common symptom. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So these are things for people to be aware of. You know, so today, you know, we have so many advances in technology, and I know there's a lot of different types of testing opportunities out there. You know, traditionally, when we think of a sleep test, we think of going into some office somewhere and sleeping in a bed and getting hooked up to all these wires and all this stuff. But I know there's other options out there, and that's what I'm going to ask you about next. But before I ask you about that, we've got to stop and take a commercial break. But when we come back, let's learn all about different opportunities for testing sleep apnea. So I'm Andrew Kolsky. This is Sleep Science Today. We will be right back and talk more about apnea testing.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sleep Science Today offers a lot of great resources for our listeners, including a popular sleep support group. Don't miss out on what we have to offer. Find all of our resources at sleepsciencetoday.com. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to this channel.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking about sleep apnea testing right now with Dr. Chelsea Rorscheib. So, doctor, tell us what types of tests are available that are actually convenient, because I know that's an important thing for people is convenience.
Yeah. So many people that come to me say, you know what, I think I might have this sleep disorder. I've been dealing with it for such a long time, but I really don't want to have to go sleep in a lab overnight. I'm really scared. And the good news is, you know, that's kind of a thing of the past. So back in the day, pretty much everyone who needed a sleep test went into a hospital or a clinic, hooked up to a bunch of wires all over their body, their face, their head, and they had to sleep in an unfamiliar bed in kind of like a cold room while somebody watched you sleep. And that's very daunting and off-putting to a lot of people. I know, I've done two of them, so I'm very well-versed of how uncomfortable they are. Right. But in the last 10 years, technology has progressed so quickly, and we've introduced home sleep testing for very specific sleep disorders. So like I said earlier, the most common sleep disorder is insomnia. Now, insomnia is typically diagnosed through history and sleep diary. You don't necessarily need a lab study for that. Alternatively, sleep apnea, you do need an actual study to diagnose you for sleep apnea. And this is because we have to look at how you're breathing during sleep. We have to understand how often you stop breathing during sleep, how long those pauses last for, and how much it actually affects your oxygen levels. Mm-hmm. So now we have home sleep apnea tests, which are nearly as accurate as an in-lab study for diagnosing sleep apnea. The benefit is these tests are tiny. They're usually made up of a single component or, you know, a 2 to 3 component. It's a small sensor that you typically place on your body. You know, oftentimes it's on your finger or your wrist or on your trunk. And these devices connect wirelessly, typically to a mobile app that you run while you sleep via Bluetooth. And that data is processed and uploaded to typically a secure cloud-based server to be analyzed while you sleep. These devices are so small and so comfortable. Once you put them on, you barely know they're there. The other benefit is you get to sleep in your own bed, in your own environment. Right. And most people sleep so much better. So what that means is the data that we do get from those devices are a very accurate depiction of what a typical night is for you. These devices also allow multiple nights of data collection. So in lab studies are very complex. They're very expensive. They're very time consuming. At least in the United States, most of the time, your insurance carrier is only going to cover one study, whereas these home sleep tests are very inexpensive and very easy to use. So you can typically do multiple nights of study, which means we get a very good longitudinal look at how your sleep is and how it might change from night to night, because no two nights are exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you described several different types of devices, like something on your wrist or something mm-hmm. on your finger or something on the trunk of your body. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to see a lot of these because I go to sleep conferences. And of course, you get mm-hmm. to see all the devices out there. So here's my question then. In terms of home sleep tests, mm-hmm. I know sleep apnea is a big issue. We started off testing sleep apnea because that's one of the biggest things people are tested for. Today, here we are, 2026. Are devices able to measure other things in home tests? Like, where are we today?
Yeah, they're certainly moving in that direction. So basically, the devices are getting closer to collecting the amount of data that we would typically see in an in-lab study. And what that means is we can start looking at other sleep disorders that aren't necessarily related to sleep-disordered breathing. So for instance, there are devices out there that are screening for leg movement disorders. So this would be like restless leg syndrome, periodic limb movement disorder, which is essentially at night when you are asleep, your legs will kick out in a very rhythmic way. Now, that can be a disorder in itself. It's usually related to a neurological issue, or it can be related to other sleep disorders like sleep apnea. There are some home sleep tests that are even looking at screening for disorders like narcolepsy, certain sleep behavioral disorders. So I think they are getting pretty cool and pretty advanced, and okay. I'm very excited to see where the industry moves.
Wow. Yeah. So somebody who invests, I don't even know what the cost is today, in an Apple Watch or something like that, are they able to do their own little sleep test with that?
Yeah, with limitations. So the consumer wearables are not medical grade, which means they're not FDA approved to collect accurate medical data. Medical devices that are FDA approved have to go through a very rigorous testing process, and they're always tested against the gold standard, which in sleep medicine is an in-lab sleep study. So basically what that means is we have to have a patient undergo an in-lab study and wear one of these home sleep tests at the same times, and then we compare accuracy. And those consumer grade products don't typically undergo that rigorous testing. However, they can be a really good screening tool. So these devices are getting more interesting with the data they're collecting. They're certainly collecting data about your sleep behaviors, your sleep time, how frequently you're waking up. They can give some sleep staging information. So how you move through each sleep stage, you know, N1 through N3, and then obviously REM as well. They are starting to collect information about your oxygen. So they can tell when your oxygen dips and uh-huh. if that might be related to your breathing. And so it can alert you to whether or not you might have a disorder like sleep apnea. So I think, you know, take it with a grain of salt. They're not as accurate as a medical grade device. But if you see anything really weird and you see those weird data points come up consistently, it may be good to go have a chat with your doctor about getting an actual medical grade sleep study.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I mean, just watching the proliferation of technology and how quickly it's going. And then with AI being added to everything today, you know, mm-hmm. and what that does is just amazing. So let me ask you this then. You know, you're obviously, as we said in the intro, working with a company called Wesper. Mm-hmm. What do you all do?
Yeah. So Wesper is one of those home sleep apnea devices. Basically, we are FDA cleared to test for obstructive and central type sleep apnea. So we can do either or. Some people have mixed sleep apnea, which means they have both obstructive and central at the same time. Our device works on respiratory efforts. So it's composed of about two inch biosensor patches. So they're about this long. They're very flexible and they're very cushy and they adhere to the abdomen and thorax. And when the patient is asleep and they're inhaling and exhaling, those patches are very, very sensitive to chest wall movement, and they can detect whether you stop breathing, how long you stop breathing for, whether you have a full breathing stoppage where you're getting no oxygen into your lungs, or a partial breathing stoppage where you're getting some oxygen but not enough. And that's also paired to a finger pulse oximeter, which tells us about your oxygen level. So how does your oxygen level respond to those breathing stoppages? And from that, we can collect very sensitive and detailed information about that individual's sleep, respiration, body position, body temperature, heart rate, SpO2, which is your blood oxygen saturation. And when we combine all of that data, we can determine whether or not that patient has sleep apnea. We're also multi-night capable, which means we can test the patient over a long period of time. So as few or as many nights as you want.
Well, that's interesting, because most of the tests that I've been exposed to are like a one night, you know, and then it's disposable and then you're done. I am curious. You said that you've got this pulse oximeter on the finger, but then you've got also other things that are on your abdomen. Is there, just out of curiosity, is there like a wire that goes from your finger down to your abdomen? So you got this wire you got to deal with when you're sleeping, or is that not the case?
Yeah, no, it's all independent, and it all connects wirelessly to a mobile app that you would run off your phone via Bluetooth, and all that data just gets uploaded and integrated into a cloud-based algorithm. And then when that goes to the algorithm, it goes into a provider portal. The doctors can log in and they can check on all their patients. They can see their raw sleep study signals, and they can also see the patient's clinical reports.
Okay. So this is not something that I would go to the local drugstore and buy. This is something I'm going to get from my doctor.
Yeah, typically this is a prescribed device. So you would see your doctor, usually somebody who already works with our company. You know, there are doctors all over the country that use a wide variety of home sleep apnea tests. Some just use one. Some have multiple home sleep apnea tests they like to use. So it really depends on the provider you go to. There are also various telehealth clinicians that can prescribe over online after they speak with you. But generally, what happens is once that device is prescribed to you, it gets shipped directly to your house. You download the app, you set up the test, you take the test, and then you send it back to us, and we take care of everything.
Okay. And you said it could be used multiple nights. Is it something that's designed to be a disposable, or what do I do with it when I'm done?
So ours is not a disposable. There are certainly disposable devices on market. Ours is really meant for not only testing, but also remote patient monitoring. So our device is completely reusable and rechargeable. It usually has about a 60-hour battery life, so you can do multiple nights of testing without having to recharge. And it really depends on the use case scenario. So if you're just wanting to diagnose a patient, you might just test them for one or two nights, and that's good enough, and you're happy with those results. But let's say that you are putting that patient on a therapy like an oral appliance, for example. Okay. That oral appliance has to be adjusted over time to get it to the right setting to make sure that it is appropriately reducing down the number of respiratory events that patient is having. That means the patient has to adjust the device and then test frequently to determine where that device needs to be. That might take a week. That might take a whole month. So that patient might hold on to that device for 4 weeks and test a few times each week before actually sending it back.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that answers a common question that I always had, which is, you know, you have someone who does like a one night at home sleep apnea, you know, test, and they find out they've got sleep apnea. Let's say they get prescribed a CPAP machine, and they go home, and now they're on their CPAP machine, and everybody goes about their business. But there's no follow-up. How do we know that the CPAP machine is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Right. And I think so. We're definitely moving in the direction that you're probably considering, which is, why do we just test people, give them a therapy and send them home and not monitor them? We are starting to really understand in the industry that monitoring and support with these patients is really important. First of all, multi-night testing is going to be standard in the future. And this is because most people have a lot of variation in the severity of their sleep apnea from night to night, which means if you have somebody who is typically a mild sleep apnea patient, they can have nights that look normal or almost normal. And so you don't really want to diagnose them based off of that night. So you want to test them for a few more nights to make absolutely sure that you know exactly what their sleep apnea looks like typically. Mm-hmm. And then once they're on the therapy, not only do you want to make sure that therapy is effective and working the way it should, but you also want to make sure that the effectiveness of that therapy doesn't reduce over time. And it also helps to monitor adherence to that therapy. So some therapies don't have the best adherence. Even though CPAP is highly effective in people who actually use the device, the adherence rates are pretty low. So it's anywhere from like 40 to 50%. So not ideal.
Right.
So monitoring the sleep apnea with something like our device or another home sleep apnea test can be very, very helpful in that case to help guide and support that patient as they adjust to their therapies.
Fantastic. Well, let me stop us here for another commercial break, because we've got to get that in. So we're going to come back and let's talk a little bit about the future of sleep medicine when we come back. So I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. This is Sleep Science Today. We'll see you back after the break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sleep Science Today offers a lot of great resources for our listeners, including a popular sleep support group. Don't miss out on what we have to offer. Find all of our resources at sleepsciencetoday.com. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to this channel.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We are talking now about the future of sleep medicine and sleep testing. Tell us, so Dr. Rorschach, are there any interesting studies or devices or things that you're aware of that are kind of giving us a peek into the future of sleep medicine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are seeing more utilization of dual device therapies. So traditionally, when somebody has been diagnosed with a sleep disorder like sleep apnea, they were pretty much prescribed the CPAP and they were sent on their way and that was it. But the more we understand about this disease, the more we understand that sometimes people need multiple therapies and multiple lifestyle changes at the same time. So, for instance, we're seeing more utilization of things like myofunctional therapy, which is basically training the oral pathways to be stronger and hold your tongue in the correct position while you sleep. And that's typically combined with a therapy like CPAP. We have a therapy called Inspire, which you're probably familiar with. This is a device that stimulates the hypoglossal nerve, which is a nerve in your neck. Basically, it's a pacemaker that goes into your chest. It gets attached to the nerve and it stimulates the nerve at night. And this helps move your tongue into a forward position, preventing your tongue from blocking the airways. Now, that is an amazing therapy. And recently, specialists and the sleep industry have adapted that same therapy into the nerves that control the diaphragm, which are a little bit different. And this is to treat central sleep apnea. And central sleep apnea occurs when the brain does not sufficiently give the appropriate signals to the diaphragm to actually breathe. Uh-huh. So that therapy essentially stimulates the diaphragm in a normal rhythmic breathing pattern. For those individuals. Now, some people have obstructive and central sleep apnea, and they're starting to use both the Inspire device and that remedy device at the same time, which is pretty cool. I've seen a few cases come through. And then, of course, you know, with the introduction of these weight loss medications, tirzepatide, Zepbound, we're starting to see more individuals prescribed this instead of directly going on something like CPAP for weight loss related sleep apnea as well. Now, certainly with the technology moving forward, we're starting to see sleep testing devices get more complex, specifically home sleep testing devices that can do more things than just measure respiration and blood oxygen saturation. You know, devices are coming out with mini EEGs, you know, on the head. They're coming out with, you know, cardiovascular sensors, leg sensors, body sensors. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow. It's amazing what we can do these days. What about AI? Are you seeing that being used in any of the technologies that you're, you know, talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And it's really good that you brought that up, because I think this is perhaps one of the most interesting areas that we're moving into. Obviously, AI is a huge topic right now because it's absolutely exploded in the last 2 years. It's becoming very clear that AI, well, not a replacement for humans, so it's never going to replace doctors or nurses or sleep technicians. It is definitely very helpful for those specialists to help improve accuracy, efficiency, and diagnostic rates in their patients. Mm-hmm. I can give you an example for our device specifically, how we utilize AI. So one of the things we have in our algorithm is an auto scoring algorithm, which means that the raw data that gets analyzed when it's uploaded from our device into our algorithm is pre-scored, so that when a physician opens up those raw signals, they can automatically see where the algorithm scored different respiratory events, like a hypopnea, which is a partial airway blockage, to an apnea, which is basically a full airway blockage, and also differing between the obstructive types versus the central, and a wide range of other metrics as well. Now AI kind of learns that it's a ghost. So the more patient data we feed it, the more accurate that AI gets. And it's becoming quite similar to manual human scoring. And I think that's a huge time saver for anyone who's used to reading sleep studies. All those individuals know exactly how time consuming that is. And this really just speeds up the process. Right. It also just improves overall accuracy. So it takes away a lot of those issues that might cause some mistakes or errors, like maybe a technician's really sleepy, you know, maybe their eyes are tired, things like that, which can cause accuracy issues. And then some other ways AI is really helping is it can start to make personal recommendations based on trends they're seeing from that patient. So it can collate the individual's health history, their demographic information, their sleep study results. And based on that, it might say, hey, you know what? This patient has such and such scores on their sleep study. They're such and such BMI. They have these health conditions. This patient might be most appropriate for a CPAP rather than a mandibular advancement device. Or this patient may benefit from Inspire, rather than, you know, CPAP. So that's how it's getting really interesting.
Wow. So taking that sort of to the next step then is, you know, we've talked a lot about sleep apnea here, and We mentioned that there's so many other sleep disorders. Are there, if someone tends to have sleep apnea, are there common comorbidities that we might want to look at?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is really the reason sleep apnea is so problematic. So yes, sleep apnea makes you feel tired. It causes cognitive issues, and that obviously is going to reduce the overall quality of your life. But in the long term, sleep apnea can be quite dangerous. And this is because it is a major comorbidity for many chronic health conditions that can reduce lifespan and also lead to a lot of other issues, just like, you know, poor mental health, you know, just an inability to perform in everyday life, whether that's at work or within relationships. So for instance, sleep apnea is a major contributor to almost every type of cardiovascular issue you can think of. This includes hypertension, stroke, heart disease, heart failure, arrhythmias, you name it. So if you have sleep apnea, your risk for any of these issues is massively increased, sometimes by up to 140% for some of these conditions. And obviously, wow, with heart disease, this carries a risk of early death. So these are things that we want to address early on. So the earlier we can screen, diagnose, and treat somebody with sleep apnea, the less likely they are to go on and develop those conditions. Some other conditions that sleep apnea is commonly associated with are metabolic diseases. So like type 2 diabetes, general insulin resistance. Neurodegenerative disorders are getting a lot more focus, and that's because we really understand more about how important sleep is to maintain the brain's health. So sleep apnea raises your risk for Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and a variety of other conditions as well. Certainly, sleep apnea, because it does affect your sleep so much, can contribute to a lot of mental health issues. More commonly, things like depression and anxiety, but most mental health conditions have a sleep component. So when you're not sleeping, they just tend to get worse on average, and right, a wide range of other conditions as well. Outside of medical conditions specifically, having sleep apnea also raises your risk for accidents, typically motor vehicle accidents. Or workplace-related accidents when you're operating heavy machinery. That's also a major issue as well.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that is one message that I try to put out on the show as often as I can, is making people aware that sleepy driving isn't just, you know, something that not to worry about. Sleepy driving is just as bad, if not worse, than drunk driving in many cases, mm-hmm, based on some of the studies. So, you know, it's something for people to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last study I read was one night of sleep deprivation is equivalent to having a blood alcohol limit of 0.08, which is in the United States, that's the limit where you are legally no longer allowed to drive. Right. So you're basically driving under the influence.
Yep, I think we both read exactly the same study, because mm-hmm, that's what the study said that I read. So, well, we actually are out of time for the show. Surprisingly, this seemed to have flown by. I really appreciate you taking the time to share all these different insights with us. It's been very educational, and you know, we're learning a lot about our own sleep health through this, so that people can find the appropriate treatment, you know, should they think that they need it. So I will turn it over to you for any last words or thoughts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always emphasize that, you know, if you have any sleep issues at all, if you've tried everything, if you've, you know, tried to improve your sleep hygiene, if you've tried supplements, if you've done all the things and you're still feeling tired during the day, even if you don't have any major symptoms of these sleep disorders, it's so, so important to speak with your doctor, because sleep is so essential to maintain health. And, you know, there's a reason we spend one third of our life asleep. It's because the body absolutely needs it to stay healthy and alive. So always talk to your doctor if you have issues.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for that. And I want to remind the audience to please visit us at sleepsciencetoday.com, where you'll find access to this and other episodes. You'll be able to watch the YouTube feed, and you can actually see us speaking live, or not live, but you can see us on video. And we have a lot of other resources there for you, sleepsciencetoday.com. So thank you for joining us. We look forward to seeing you on a future show. Dr. Rorschach, thank you so much for the work that you do. And we appreciate you being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.